that this will resemble meaningfully classical GR, so that we can claim that this theory is indeed reflecting gravity the way we know it. Now, if this theory indeed is developing an ultraviolet fixed point, what is most important is its properties in the vicinity of this fixed point. Is there a... Oh, yes, here it is. Okay. So if we were to be expanding the possibly infinitely many beta functions while running couplings in the vicinity of such a fixed point, okay, we could instantaneously integrate the running of these couplings in its vicinity. So the most important point here is highlighted in red. Namely, once you've integrated, you realize that the eigenvalues of our stability matrix, which are these numbers theta here, will tell us whether couplings will be relevant, marginal, or irrelevant at highest energies. Now, why is this important? If these indices, if these scaling exponents are positive, then that means that with k going to infinity, in order to achieve the fixed point lambda star, we must tune these coefficients cn to zero, or else we will deviate arbitrarily from that fixed point. On the other hand, if these exponents are negative, then all these small perturbations will automatically run into that fixed point. So we know that this coefficient cn will be unconstrained. So this is what we refer to as relevant operators. Now, $1 million question, of course, is what do we know a priori about those scaling exponents? Okay? So it's related to the question of knowing beforehand which will be the set of relevant, marginal, or irrelevant operators at such a fixed point. Now, let's get a little bit of inspiration from a theory we know perhaps a tiny bit better than gravity, which is QCD. QCD has the property of asymptotic freedom. The asymptotic freedom is characterized by a fixed point in the ultraviolet at vanishing coupling G star equals zero, which has important consequences, namely consequence that the anomalous dimensions of invariance in an action for, say, QCD, yes, those will be vanishing. And for that reason, we can employ canonical power counting in order to determine what will be the set of scaling exponent at an asymptotically free fixed point. So punchline is, this set of scaling exponents is known, and it is known beforehand. It's known beforehand because we know that this theory becomes arbitrarily weakly coupled at highest energies. Okay. Consequence of this is that if somebody were to be asking me, well, what's about field strength to the power 256? Yes, very nice. It's a beautiful operator, except that nobody's interested in that one in the UE because it's completely irrelevant according to this power counting. Now, if we speak about gravity, and which is what, of course, we have in mind, but maybe a tiny bit more generally, if we speak about a theory which potentially could become asymptotically safe, yes, we play a completely different game, because a priori, what asymptotic safety means is that we will be searching for a fixed point which remains interacting. And if we search for a fixed point which remains interacting, we wouldn't know a priori what the anomalous dimensions of invariance will be. The only thing, if such a thing were to exist, the only thing we know is the power counting is going to be most likely to be non-canonical. In particular, the set of scaling exponents is not known. And if you were to be asking me, what's about, say, curvature invariance to the power 256? Well, nobody would be able to tell you right now whether this is a relevant, marginal, or irrelevant operator at an asymptotically, say, fixed point in such a theory. Now, what's the trouble with this? The trouble with this is that you wouldn't necessarily know how to be sure that if you start making hard computations looking for such a fixed point, okay, typically you will have to truncate your space of operators to a finite set. But when would you know, or when would you be confident in claiming that actually you have identified a non-trivial ultraviolet fixed point in that theory based on a finite operator space and based of the lack of a priori information about what the set of scaling exponent at potential not interacting fixed point would be. Yes, of course. Yes. It will be part of some eigenoperator, probably, but of course. Absolutely. Good. So that, and that's, you see, the point I'd like to make here is that this is really a conceptual problem. Whenever you would want to ask a question about a theory which potentially becomes asymptotically safe. So it's not a problem only for gravity. So you could imagine, you could ask yourself maybe the academic question, is QCD in six dimensions a theory which exists fundamentally? And if so, it should become asymptotically safe indeed, but it would have very similar UV divergences as four-dimensional gravity, okay? Now, we know very well, I mean, not myself, but many of my colleagues, know very well how to study hard QCD in four dimensions on the lattice, okay? But all these techniques are of no use if you go to six dimensions. Because, and the reason being that we don't know a priori which will be the relevant, marginal, and irrelevant operators, which have to be taken into consideration before a simulation even could be done. Okay? So, now in order to deal with this situation, we've been making a proposal. The proposal was to use a bootstrap type hypothesis. So the idea here, in order to have a falsifiable procedure, is to make a hypothesis of how these universal eigenvalues at an asymptotically safe fixed point will look like. And the hypothesis we wanted to put forward is the claim that these will be that the relevancy of invariance at an interacting fixed point continues to be governed by the coupling's canonical mass dimension. So the claim is that if we put forward a hypothesis like this, it will be a feature which becomes systematically testable in actual computations. Now, as it is with hypothesis, yes, you can then, of course, only test this hypothesis and cannot make any statements about theories which perhaps have other features. But then again, we have no test for falsifying those. So how would this bootstrap test work in practice? So as I said, we put forward the hypothesis that ordering will be controlled by the canonical dimension of coupling. So the strategy would then be to write down invariance up to maximum mass dimension d, then to identify the fixed point, compute the scaling exponents, use whichever method you then prefer, like, okay, I do RG, but you could do that on the lattice, and maybe others have smart ideas on how to exploit holography or other tricks. Then you look in this approximated computation, what is the set of scaling exponents, and then you enhance your space of operators. You include more, you allow higher order invariants to be present. You redo the same procedure, you see what you get and compare with your previous results and test by doing this your original hypothesis. Okay, and then you start iterating this thing. Okay, nobody would know whether it does converge, and so a priori you wouldn't know how many iterations you will have to do, but you can give it a go and let's see what comes out in a given test model. So what we did is we tried to play that game with the theory of gravity, where we simplify the action, and there's a simplifying assumption, we say that the action is only built out of Ricci scalars. Okay, so this relates to the model discussed by Tim yesterday, called F of R, type models of gravity. So I write down an action which has powers of the Ricci scalar in some form. Now, this approximation, the maximum canonical mass dimension is then given by the maximum order of the power in the Ricci scala retained in the action. Now, you crank your handle, so you use well, this is what we've been doing at least, we've been using our RG machinery, and we've analyzed the fixed point of this, this setup. Good. Now, how does it look like in practice? In practice, what you actually get is you get a kind of generating function for the RG flow of all the various couplings appearing in your action, which I denoted as lambda n. Good. Now, in order to identify fixed points, we solve these equations recursively. So I didn't write out these expressions explicitly here. They are a bit, they are a tiny bit lengthy. Okay, but what we did is we solved the fixed point equation recursively, and it so turns out that you can reduce the fixed point search to in the following way. Solving this recursively gives you algebraic expressions for all your fixed point couplings as functions of the two lowest ones, lambda 0 and lambda 1, which, yes, are related to cosmological constant and effectively Newton's coupling. And it then remains to figure out, well, they appear as free parameters, which need to be fixed by some other mean. Okay. Now, in a sense, this is not particularly new, so I open a small bracket. And I remind some of you have seen these things before. I mean, but these are games which are standard techniques in, say, critical phenomena such as the Wilson-Fischer fixed point, where this has been applied in the past. So there you can play exactly the very same tricks. You look for the Wilson-Fischer fixed point. Okay, you have some potential for your scalar field. You may or may not polynomially expand it, but if you do, you can again recursively solve your fixed point equation in terms of just one coupling, which is the dimensionless mass term of your scalar field in units of the RG scale. Now, if you play that game there, then the only thing which you still have to determine is this number m squared. And in order to determine this number m squared, what you do is you say, okay, let's approximate our polynomial expansion at some highest order m, and put lambda m to 0. Now, lambda m, as I just said, we know lambda m algebraically, so it's a high-order polynomial of m squared. Now, this high-order polynomial, putting it to 0, yes, will give you a lot of zeros over the complex plane, and actually also quite a few on the real axis, which are those we are looking forward. And I plotted here, as a function of the approximation order, the zeros of that function. And you see you have a lot of zeros. But interestingly, you have find an accumulation point corresponding to the Gaussian fixed point of your theory, and you find an accumulation point corresponding to the Wilson-Fischer fixed point of your theory. Okay, and then you can play around with your universality classes, but you always get exactly the same features and structure of the solution space. Okay, so the punchline of this study is that we have access to the non-trivial Wilson-Fischer fixed point in this expansion by making a local expansion of the underlying RG equations in a systematic way by simply in technically enhancing the order of approximation.
Sorry, you have two figures there.
Easing and XY. Yes. Oh, that's n equal 1 and n equal 2 universality classes. Okay, and so then you go on and plot the scaling exponents, and you see that with truncation order, which is what I called m on the previous slide, okay, you have a fairly rapid convergence of results. Good, let's come back to f of r gravity. So in f of r gravity, as I said, the situation is a tiny bit more complicated because our functions are now polynomials, but in two unknown quantities. And so we can write them as ratios, actually, of polynomials. So these guys we know. Now, to do the same strategy, we have to put lambda n and lambda n plus 1 to 0, in the same vein of stating that we've made that approximation, according to which those polynomials are not retained. Okay. Now, technically, it's good, okay. These polynomials are getting quite big, so P35 kind of contains 45,000 terms already. So finding these zeros is getting a bit tricky. But this is how it technically looks like. So for n equals 16, I've shown you just one such plot. The null clients corresponding to these conditions, you can see them here. Okay. So you do see fixed points and spurious fixed points. And if you change the approximation order from lower to higher, you will see that that there is a unique fixed point with the right features, which appears again as an accumulation point in the space of fixed point solutions of this approximation. Good. Now you can go forward and use this technique and systematically analyze these actions order by order. So what you see here is the fixed point coordinates, which we found according to the strategy just described. Okay? So you see that all these couplings, lambda 0, 1, 2, 3, and so on and so forth, with increasing approximation order, converge, stabilize rapidly. Okay? Now the plot you don't see here would have been a higher order resolution, but for some reason it didn't appear in the PDF. So one does see reasonably fast convergence, and also there's some hidden eightfold periodicity pattern in this system. Good. The convergence is good enough so that you can actually technically make an infinite n limit and plot the fixed point scaling solution, which is this one here. So the infinite n extrapolation would bring you just up to the radius of convergence, which is roughly here. You can integrate those equations then even beyond that limit, and you would hit those particular points which Tim mentioned yesterday in the vicinity of Ricci scalar and units of k squared of the order of 2. Good. So that's the fixed point. Now we look into the universal eigenvalues, because it's for these that we have a bootstrap strategy. Yes? Yes, the top points of the top is like it's the coordinate, I think, lambda 28, which initially is far off, and it takes it a little while to start converging. Okay. No, no particular significance. No. The more interesting one is lambda 2, which is the R squared coupling, which actually takes it a much longer, say, time or many more orders of magnitude of approximation order before that guy settles. Even the R cubed and the R fourth coupling converge more rapidly. Good. So these are the scaling exponents here, all of them, approximation order, and we plot all the scaling the values for scaling exponents in a row on top of it. Okay. So now the important thing with this is now we have for each and every approximation order we have a set of scaling exponents, so we can check now whether these results fulfill the ordering principle which we kind of were postulating or where we were hoping for that that one can be tested. So this is done here. So what this plot is showing you is, so if you look, for example, into this line here, D3, okay, what it shows is the highest entry is, say, the third highest eigenvalue at the highest approximation order where we have 35 curvature, 35 powers of the Ricci scala in the action. Now in this line, the next one is the highest, the third highest eigenvalue of the approximation order below 34. The next one, approximation order 33, 32, 31, and so on and so forth. So as we said initially, the idea of the bootstrap is we want to test whether adding another power, yes, the next higher power of curvature invariance to that action will lead to eigenvalues which will be bigger than those present originally in the system. Yes, this must mean that all these curves, which, yes, should have a positive slope. And this is what will then document, okay, that indeed this ordering principle is reflected order by order. So you see a few wiggles here. These wiggles occur because some of these scaling exponents come out as complex conjugate pairs. Good. So much for f of r gravity. You may wonder, okay, is this something which you can push beyond just studying Ricci scalars? And so what we've done in order to test this is we've analyzed an action. So this is also for Simone, who was looking for more examples yesterday of where asymptotic safety can be tested. So these are actions where you have cosmological constant terms, powers of r mu nu squared, and Ricci scala times powers, further powers of r mu nu squared in your action. Okay, so you derive your flow equation for this guy. You again get a generating function, which gives us all the beta functions for all these polynomial couplings, which we can expand again. it now looks a tiny bit more complicated. Also, the recursive solution is a tiny bit more demanding now. But the result you find, we've pushed this up to order 14 for now, is interesting in as much as the convergence is substantially faster than in the theory where we only were considering Ricci scala. Okay, so you see, we don't have to go to order 35 to already see a very stable picture in for our fixed point coordinates. Now, this does translate immediately to actually also the eigenvalue. So we once again find three relevant eigendirections, but the convergence in the system is much more rapid than in the system which only retains the dynamics of the Ricci scala. Good. So you can then again do the very same bootstrap test. You see the same feature. Okay. So I think this is a good sign, A, for asymptotic safety in gravity, but also conceptually because it allows you to actually make these texts in a systematic manner. So I think the lesson we can learn from this is that we have a testable search strategy. Yes, it's applicable for generic asymptotically safe theories. There is a consistent picture now in F of R type theories and first extensions thereof. Okay, I haven't commented on signs of near Gaussian scaling, but good, okay, I'm a bit short of time, so let me swap now to the second part of my talk. Yes. No, I have not. Yes, very good point. But I have not. Okay, I have not added c squared. If I add c squared, I do see that fixed point. In this particular computation, we have not added c squared, and therefore we do not see that fixed point. I do need c squared as well in the game to have that fixed point come out. Mm-hmm. No, not in that one. Not in that particular computation. Yes. So there. Yes. Okay. So there is. I mean, yes. You know, there is like a plethora of actions I could have studied. Okay. And so we made some wild pick because we wanted to have something which is different from just F of R, which carries more structure in it. Okay, and we wanted to see how that impacts on the structure of these solutions. Yes, but of course you could have studied many more things. Okay.
For the background, because now that you have Ricci squared, it's also interesting that your background could be, so are you using like maximally symmetric?
Well, we've projected on spheres, yes. Okay. Mm-hmm. For that computation. Good. So let me now shift gears a little bit, okay, and talk about potential phenomenological signatures of asymptotic safety. So there is a regime, I mean, Lee very heavily stressed yesterday that we all ought now to look perhaps into BICEP and have results before October. Now there's another corner where quantum gravity signatures have been advertised for quite some time, and that's actually the LHC. As you know, there are these low-scale quantum gravity models which have been put forward 15 years back based on n extra compactified dimensions which imply that the effective Planck scale m star could be much, much smaller than what we think, 10 to the 18 GeV, yes, is the actual Planck scale. So if these models, which would require extra dimensions for gravity, are realized in nature, then the Planck scale could be as low as the TeV scale, in which case LHC would be sensitive to quantum gravity effects. Now, as you certainly know, I mean, this is something where people have put a lot of effort into, particularly also experimentalists. They look for signatures, deviations from standard model particle signatures in their data. Now, the key directions where colliders will be looking for is either real graviton emission, which would be parton-parton collisions with jets and graviton being emitted, so missing energy, yes, virtual graviton effects, which would be kind of Drellian process where two leptons or two, yes, quarks collide, okay, become a graviton, which then again decays into a lepton pair. Okay, so this would correspond to deviations in standard model reference processes. As I said, Drillian production is one of these, and possibly mini black hole production, but I won't talk about that today. So how does Drillian in this setup work? Drillian works like this. These gentlemen have put forward those considerations. So in the spirit of effective theory, the tree level amplitude for graviton-mediated Drillian production is splits into a bit which comes from the particles, so the particle energy momentum tensor, multiplied with the term which comes essentially from the exchanged higher dimensional graviton, okay, which consists of the graviton propagator and a sum of the graviton Kaluza-Klein modes coming from the compactified extra dimensions. Now, the trouble with virtual graviton exchange in tree level in these models is that these amplitudes are ultraviolet divergent in more than two extra dimensions because the Kaluza-Klein sum diverges. So technically what people have done is, I mean, they put an ultraviolet cutoff to this sum and then write down an effective operator, which is then a function of the ultraviolet cutoff in these equations. So what we've been putting forward together with Tilman Plain some time back is instead to dress the graviton propagator by its wave function factor, which we would take from the RG equations of gravity, and then identify in the RG scale with the kinematic parameters of our theory. Now the input, so the RG input in this will be some information about how the running gravitational coupling crosses over from infrared physics at some energy scale, say lambda t, the transition scale, which could be interpreted as the fundamental Planck scale in this model, to some high energy behavior, which is a kind of anti-screening behavior. Okay, so let's look into what this gives. Now, if the first thing, missing energy, so real gravitons being emitted, but jets is what we see. We have bounds from effective theory. They've been reported by all those experiments. CMS is the best one. Here we have the data. The bound on the fundamental Planck scale as a function of the number of extra dimensions. Now, taking this data and putting in the RG-improved amplitude, we find the following result. So here we've simulated standard model backgrounds using PCR. This is done for 7 TeV center of mass energy in a certain approximation for the RGA running. Those details are perhaps not so important. This would be the bound, for example, coming from effective theory in the case of six extra dimensions. Now, in our model, what would happen is that this bound is softened. So everything underneath this violet curve is now still available and not excluded by CMS data, but it's kind of a plane in the lambda t fundamental Planck scale plane. And the same, you know, but kind of slightly located at different points, the same for other numbers of extra dimension. There's graviton plus z. Now you can also, thank you, you can also look into virtual gravitons, so Drillian type productions and diphoton production. This is the data from both ATLAS and CMS experiments. And since experiments, unfortunately, have not yet seen any deviation from standard model physics, they have a 95% confidence level on lower limits on this effective theory cutoff parameter, which appears in the effective theory amplitude. So that's how the analysis of the experiments had been done. And so they deliver us these numbers for the effective cutoff scale from effective theory. Okay. Now, if we play that very same game with the model from asymptotic safety, what we do find, again, is a constrained plane. Okay. So taking the ATLAS data, we have, for example, this would be the line for n equals 3 extra dimensions. And so this entire regime up here is still open. But this regime is clearly excluded now by the data. So you see, it leads to a kind of, if you want, interpretation of LHC data in the light of a quantum gravity model, which in this case is asymptotic safety. So if Now, if we get lucky, and I mean, the experimentalists obviously are all hoping that we get lucky even beyond having already found the Higgs particle, yes, we may at some point see some deviation from standard model physics. And there's this perhaps at that point where games of this sort will get really interesting, because then you would obviously want to understand, is this perhaps a signature coming from quantum gravity, or is it a signature coming from supersymmetry or any other conceivable extension of the standard model? Okay. Now, finally, you can, I mean, play the very same game now with the dilepton production. Okay, you find similar exclusion plots. Okay, so there's nothing specifically new added here. So I'm running out of time. So let me. So the lesson from this is perhaps that perhaps say unexpectedly for this quantum gravity community here, right? But the, there seems to be an unexpected door into LHC physics, yes, which has been opened by considerations having to do with low-scale quantum gravity models. Okay, in the simplest approximation, this seems to be sensitive to all sorts of processes: Drellian, missing transverse energy plus threats, photon productions, and possibly also black hole productions, allowing a reinterpretation of LHC bounds. Thank you.
So you derive the fluctuation spectrum, including Ricci squared and so on, but you project it on F of R.
Yes, we project it on spheres, which is sufficient to distinguish all the operators we retain. So we've got closed expression. We've got closed expressions for now. We've got closed expressions for the flow of the function f and the flow of the function z. They speak to each other, so instead of one, we now have two. Okay, and so in the spirit of making a polynomial expansion, which is what we did, kind of we expanded them to make this test thing.
The naive question, if you're on a sphere, how do you tell the difference between mu and r?
The trick is very simple. Yes, the polynomial expansion helps us. Uh-huh. Because the argument here, you see, the argument of the function is a square, so you have even and odd powers. So this helps us differentiating these. So we know exactly where these come from.
So you attribute all even powers to mu contracted.
So both f and z, so to speak, are even functions, and r times z, therefore, is odd. Yes.
But don't you expect the difference if you really calculate it on the generic background and you would have contributions like only to the Kretschmann scale or something which you normally have with?
Absolutely. You're totally right. Yes, absolutely. And then the same holds true with f of r, you know. It's like, okay, you're absolutely right, and in principle, this is what we would be very happy if we had the technical ability for doing computations like that, but I don't have it yet. There are tricks, and there are ways and techniques to evaluate things on more sophisticated backgrounds, which allows to differentiate, say, curvature invariants of the same mass dimension. Okay, but this is also kind of, you cannot distinguish more than just a few. Okay, and so if you really go to high orders, then you will get a large variety of these. And differentiating those will be very, very challenging. Okay, so the way for now I look into these studies is more like providing some feeling for how, see, coming back to where we started, yes, namely figuring out what could be good guiding principles and systematic search strategies, which would then be falsifiable, where you could say, no, it is not having this property if we go to higher order, and then indeed we should better leave that. Yeah. So of course, there is, as I mentioned already, there is a degree of arbitrariness in choosing some set of operators like this one, okay? So hopefully some smart guys come up one day and actually, yes, push that to the next level. That's why that still needs to be done.
Well, returning back to your slides about the two-dimensional lattice models, so the Ising and the XY.
Yes.
So how easy it is actually to find these fixed points in lattice simulations?
In 2D?
Yes, because you mentioned that you can see these fixed points, right, for the Ising model.
Yes.
Are you given, so when you talk,
I was talking about 3D in this example,
3D,
but also 2D.
Right?
Well, 2D has been studied. I mean, we have the gentleman here who did that a decade ago, if I remember correctly, or more than that too. Yeah. Yes.
So my question is, how easy is it actually to find these fixed points in lattice simulations?
Well, in 3D, it's I wouldn't say it's easy, but yes, it is. The experts understand extremely well how to measure them, and actually the lattice simulations provide the benchmark presently for the best values of those critical indices.
So here's my follow-up question or suggestion. Okay, so there are actually some kind of XY models in two dimension, even in two dimension, not three dimension, that actually doesn't experience any second order transition. So we believe that the experience only first order transition. So in this case, we believe also they don't have fixed points.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm just wondering if it is actually possible to carry out this business of the RG calculations to see actually, I mean, if the system is.
Are you having the costolith solids type transitions in mind?
Yes,
yes, of course. They've been.
Kind of KT
yes,
but
yes.
More complicated than the usual.
Yes. No, but that has been studied successfully with the RG equations as well. I mean, those properties have been seen, and it is understood why.
Yes, I know. But this model actually experienced second-order transition. Talk about some models experience only first-order transition. So in principle, we should not have fixed points.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm wondering if the RG equations will not be able to see also these fixed points.
I wouldn't know a priori, but I'm happy to discuss the specific model you have in mind with you. Yes.